You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. My guest today is Kirsten Carey. Kirsten is a guitarist and a composer who I met through the Facebook collective Art Girl Army. She has put together a mixtape called Persist, a woman's mixtape for Planned Parenthood. All the proceeds go to Planned Parenthood. You can buy the album on Bandcamp, so please go check it out. It really has a wonderful collection of songs by female musicians and female-fronted bands. Also, I'm going to be putting out a separate little mini episode with this today featuring two songs by Kirsten and her punk duo Throwaway. So be sure to check that out as well after you listen to the interview. She is currently based in Detroit, so we recorded this over Skype. I hope you enjoy the 106th episode of The Compass. What do you do to keep from going to the dark side as an artist?
I was listening to the last episode that you had put out. What was her name?
Rivka Rivera.
And it was funny because like she also gave this sort of like, oh, I knew you were gonna ask this, and then gave this like beautiful answer. I was like, oh god, that's gonna be hard to top.
There's no pressure.
I mean, you know, I. The dark side is something, I mean, I really struggle with. I'm someone who's dealt with anxiety and depression now for, you know, 15 years. And music itself was like a huge way for me to cope with that. But then kind of around when I started college and pursuing it professionally, you know, it became a source of it.
Right.
And a release still. But you know, those moments that it's a release, I like realize that I'm like, I like notice it's a release and then I put pressure on it and like, you know, trying to be like, I'm working so hard to try to be mindful of like breaking that chain of like, well, why aren't I enjoying this as much? Like, what's wrong with me? Like, oh my God, are people enjoying the show? Does everyone hate me? Like, oh.
Right? There's that self-consciousness.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a vicious cycle. But, you know, like, actually being, I think that being honest with yourself that that's happening is the first step. And then trying to remove the judgment of yourself for feeling those things, which is easier said than done. So, you know, like, I've been trying my best to just, like, not think about it. And, like, not, like, force myself to go to my instrument or to write if I don't want to, you know? But then that quickly, especially my time in L.A., that turned into, like, weeks on weeks of not going to my instrument. So I'm presently trying to find that like bounce of, well, obviously I need a little self-discipline,
right?
You know,
but also not forcing it.
Right. I think also just like in my time in LA, I was like in a huge rut of depression, and I very recently moved out, and I'm here in Detroit, near where I did my undergrad and where a lot of my friends I was playing music with in my undergrad just bopped over here. I went to University of Michigan.
So how long were you in LA before you came back?
I was in LA for 2 years.
Okay.
So it was interesting, but I think at the end of the day, I just kind of had to reconcile that it wasn't for me. And it was very, you know, it was very expensive. But, I mean, to get back to the original question, to keep from going to the dark side, I was fortunate enough in my undergrad. My undergraduate degree actually had a component that centered around taking courses in meditation.
Really?
Yeah, it was a jazz degree with a meditation component.
That's interesting.
It was amazing. And I took all these classes with this really incredible woman named Martha Travers, you know, sitting in this, like, big carpeted room at night with, like, a candle and some Palo Santo burning and, you know, like, doing different kind of, like, journaling and guided walks, and sometimes there'd be chanting or just sitting, and, like, I feel like that was such an invaluable tool, and something I let go of for a little bit just because of bad habits, but I'm, again, coming back to. And then on, like, a lighter side, like, honestly, as, like, if I'm getting so pent up that I'm just, like, I need to, like, escape for a bit, I need to do something, like, I've discovered video games this year. I've become a big practitioner of the Legend of Zelda series.
Classic.
And, like, I think, you know, stuff like that, I mean, like, video games, I'm also, like, really, really into animation and cartoons and anime, which is part of what brought me to LA. And things like that, you know, are, they're good escapes, and they're good ways of, like, blowing off a little stress, but they're things that can be just so easily abused.
Yeah.
You know, too much is not always the most productive thing. So, but it's like, you know, I'm presently trying to find the balance between all those things to, like, keep me sane. So I guess that's sort of like kind of all those components together.
That's incredible that your undergrad gave you that meditation experience.
I
wish I had been introduced to that at that age.
It was life-changing. Like, I really can't emphasize that enough. Like, it was a life-changing experience for me
Continue. I was, like, ready to ask another question because my mind is buzzing. Like, how did they describe it or explain it to you, like, the connection between why they wanted you to study meditation along with jazz?
Well, so, like, the specific jazz, the name of the degree was Jazz and Contemplative Studies, and a lot of the people that take that specific degree, I think U of M, University of Michigan, is very particular in that way. I think, I don't know where the program is now, because it obviously depends so much on the interests of the current crop of students there. But when I was there, there's a lot of people were really into improvisation and free jazz. And there's a lot of professors on the faculty who are, like, really facilitating and guiding students in that route. And U of M had, like, one of the first, to my knowledge, one of the first, like, large improvising course groups. Like, it's called the Creative Arts Orchestra. Hmm. And, like, literally just, like, once a week for rehearsal, you just go and everyone sits in a circle and we do a couple, you know, maybe a couple exercises and just improvise. Maybe some graphic scores. But, like, the meditation courses, like, the way that they tell you, not tell you, but it's, like, sort of meant to, playing freely and improvising is so, like, to do it well, it's almost, I think, less about what you play and more about how you're listening to others and how you're complementing what other people are doing.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you are starting a piece, being able to do that with, like, confidence and, like, this is my idea. Mm-hmm. And, like, when you come in, like, this is my idea. I am not, like, kind of, like, you know, squirming in with kind of, like, a note and just shaping it. it's very much to do it well. I mean, and, you know, to do any music well and be able to enjoy playing it, it's, you know, all about being in the moment, being there to listen and, like, understand what's going on and be present. And that's sort of where it was sort of seen that, like, the meditation courses and meditating and, like, focusing this, like, centered place in yourself, while obviously being help in your personal life, like, it can, if you can create that kind of silent space and that sort of focused energy, you can transfer it over to when you're playing and have that same sort of attentive space.
That's awesome.
Which makes for a more just satisfying overall experience and cohesive group for the listener.
Well, can we talk? I want to hear about, like, all the stuff you've been working on and just how your life is going right now. But can we talk a little bit first about Persist? The official title is the Persist mixtape, right?
Yeah. Persist, a mixtape for Planned Parenthood. Yeah.
When did you get that idea and how did you pull it off? It seems like a big undertaking to get all those people organized.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I got the idea probably the week or so after Trump was elected, and, like, I mean, not to politicize, you know, but, like,
I'm fine with politicizing.
I just felt so pressed and, like, helpless, and everyone I knew felt just so down and just didn't know what to do, and I was sort of, it came from this place of, like, what can I do? Like, how can I, you know, stand up for something that I care about and make, you know, try to at least feel like I'm doing something mm-hmm. towards things that are probably going to come under fire? And of course, you know, as a woman, I was so scared about all the things that were being said about defunding Planned Parenthood and just all these horrible kind of weird rumors that were being spread about what that company does behind closed doors. And so I, as with most genius ideas, it came to me in the shower that through my undergrad and through various travels, like, what if I asked a lot of the women whose music I really respect to donate a track, and, like, I can make this compilation, and then I could put it, I knew that, like, selling physical CDs would probably not wield a lot of profit and would also just be costly. Like, it would right. It would just ultimately take away from money that I would otherwise be able to donate. So I was like, well, the easiest thing to do would just be to slap it on Bandcamp. And Bandcamp was really kind. I think they typically take, I believe it's like 12 or 14% of sales, but when I emailed, and I wasn't even asking for it, I was asking if there was any way I could just, like, bypass the middleman and donate everything from the CD directly to Planned Parenthood, and the guy was just like, this is an awesome idea, like, I'm just gonna knock down the amount that goes to us to 10%, which I think is the lowest they can go.
That's great.
Yeah, like, they're...
How nice.
And, I mean, twice now, they've done, like, big campaigns for groups where it's, like, you know, like, on a day, like, every album that you buy on Bandcamp, like, Bandcamp's portion of the sales will go. So they're awesome. Support Bandcamp, everyone. that was sort of the base idea, and then I started reaching out to people. I made, like, a Facebook post. I started emailing individuals who I was like, I know you got something for this. So that's sort of how everything came about.
What criteria did you tell them you were looking for the songs to have?
The only criteria I gave was just that the band was led by a woman. And I didn't want to, like, totally exclude men, because I didn't want that to be the message. And I talked to a couple of people who were upset at that criteria too. It's like, well, why can't you have like bands led by men? And I'm like, of course, I have nothing against music made by men, but like, I felt like it's so hard to like make a platform for women's music. And I feel like those are very few and far between. It felt to me that in accordance to the end goal of the project, which is to fund women's health, it's like, well, I might as well also use this as an opportunity to put women's, to really prioritize women's voices.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, myself and every other woman in any art form and otherwise that I know has encountered some kind of, like, weird run-in where somebody assumes from the get-go that we're not as good as a male performer, or we've just had to work harder to earn respect for someone or some company or whatever. So, like, just kind of removing that criteria and being like, this is our space, was important to me. But not being so exclusive as to be like, there are no men on this album.
Right. I think that's smart. And I mean, it's Planned Parenthood should be a male issue, too. They should be the ones supporting it as well. It's not like, you know,
they have no
relationship to women.
Not on birth control.
Right, or to not be healthy in so many ways.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's awesome. So you got everybody together. And did they, so obviously they just sent you the tracks, right? Because you weren't all physically in the same place.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people, a couple people recorded things specifically for this compilation. Other people just, like, had things in the pipeline that were like, you know what, I'll just send this to you. And other, a lot of the recordings you can find elsewhere on, like, people's own releases.
Right.
So kind of, like, juggling that, you know, like, okay, what if this is exclusive? What if this is from somewhere else? Became sort of, like, something that affected the pace of, like, where, how things were coming in. And I kept kind of extending the deadline and extending the deadline. Until it was sort of like, I think like I added the last two songs like 3 days before I put it out. Like, I was like, oh no, I just met you. I want your song on this album. Oh crap, and I forgot about you. Come on, give me something.
How did you find being a producer? Was that really the first time you'd kind of orchestrated a project like that?
Yeah. I mean, it was fun. It was really emotional for me, because like, at least have met everyone on the playlist. Some of them are people like Britt Manor. I actually just like happened upon a show she was playing and didn't know who she was, but just like walked in on her set, and it was mind-blowing. It was like next level. And like she had like a backup singer, and they were doing like dancing and choreography, and like all these songs were like incredible, and her singing was incredible. And I just like went up to her after the show. I was like, I'm making this playlist, will you please be on it? And she was like, yeah. So she was great. She's so nice. But like other people on the album, like a lot of people are like dear friends from college who at that point I'd barely spoken to in like a year and a half, because I've been in LA. So like getting their songs, some of them made me tear up, like just like seeing what people are been up to and just remembering how like incredible my friends were.
Yeah. You know, like, you have that special relationship with people you spend that time in school with. You know them as an artist so well.
Yeah. And like seeing how people had grown and like being like, wow, like you're so talented and I miss you. Like I think like my friend Katie's song Elizabeth, I welled up a little bit during. Hers is track two. The last song made me well up. Tanner Porter's Pillow Talk, something like that. My friend Betsy's piece, I'm Still Here, is just heartbreaking and beautiful. It was a very emotional and just like so exciting experience, just getting all these things in, and like every time someone gave me something, it was like Christmas or something. It was like, oh man, what'd you give me? I'm so excited.
And people can still buy it, right?
Oh yeah, it's on Bandcamp, ppmixtape.bandcamp.com.
Awesome. Have you ever thought of producing like a live show version as a fundraiser?
Well, we did a live show in LA. It was my band Throwaway and Polar Tropica, who's on the album, and she's fantastic. Iwe is the singer and lead songwriter on that project, and she's awesome. She like performs in front of like her keyboard, and like she has like this incredible blue hair and like puts like all this like amazing like sparkles and like glitter like on her cheeks when she performs. They're great. And then we had Britt Manor couldn't do it, so we had like a couple other local female led bands fill out and a female DJ. It was really fun. So I'm trying. The timing is getting complicated, but I'm trying to work out a Detroit date. And that'll probably happen in March now, with the way that people's schedules are conflating and not intersecting. So yeah, if you're in the Detroit area, look out for March. And that show will probably be Throwaway and Saj Talk. I'm just speaking for Saj Talk.
You're like, they're gonna do
it. I'm assuming they're going to be on it. And Betsy Sukup, and Willa Ray, if I can get her. I know she's, I think her band, I don't know what's happening with her band right now. But I'm gonna try to swindle her, either her or Jungle Fowl.
That's awesome. I guess this is kind of two questions. Mm-hmm. One is, I'm wondering if we can talk a little bit about like how you patchwork together the financial part of your life as an artist, like with day jobs, music stuff, and how you kind of keep a clear head juggling mm-hmm. that stuff. And then the other question is, I'm always really curious how geography affects people as an artist. So like your decision to come back from LA, because I know you just moved back, right?
In October, yeah.
Yeah, in October. How that has been affecting your work.
Yeah. I'm trying to think which question it makes more sense to address first. I'll start with the jobs. So like, I mean, basically, like when I graduated college, I graduated in 2014, and it should come as no surprise that being a free jazz guitarist doesn't really earn a living. So I started, you know, the first job I got out of college was horrible. It was this horrible restaurant job, and the bosses were so mean.
Was this in Chicago?
My friend Annika, who was also on Persist, my friend Annika and I were working that job, and we're just like, screw this, and quit. And I kind of bounced between some coffee shop gigs, and then, but was just feeling kind of depressed and frustrated and cabin fever, and I was feeling at the time very disillusioned with my relationship to music. I was doubting whether or not I wanted to be a musician. And it was kind of a tough period, and I was sort of just like, I gotta get out.
Were you still in Ann Arbor, or were you in Chicago?
I was in the neighboring township of Ypsilanti.
Oh, yes.
Spelled Ypsilanti.
Yes.
Haha.
I'm familiar.
So I was living in Ipsy, which I love Ipsy. But, you know, everything's nice in retrospect. So, but at the time I was feeling just kind of, like, anxious. Like, I gotta get out. And it was my boyfriend who actually initially suggested LA. And I went in January to check it out and was like, this is great. No winter. Haha. And I ended up moving in October, and it was ironic because, like, my boyfriend planted the seed but then ended up staying in Detroit, so so we were doing the long distance thing for the whole 2 years.
That's hard.
So obviously that was a tug, but I think, you know, part of what made me interested in moving to LA was, like, as I was struggling with kind of reassessing my relationship to music, because I just felt so burnt out from school and, like, because music school is a kind of a strange thing at the end of the day. It's like, music is not, like, how do you teach a subjective thing objectively, you know? Not to say that I didn't have amazing professors and learned a lot and everything, but, like, I think, and it also didn't help at the end of my senior year, I developed tendonitis in both my wrists.
Oh, no.
Yeah, which as a guitar player is quite bad.
Yeah, so you were dealing with a lot.
Yeah, so I think I just needed to get some space and, like, reassess what I wanted to do with my life, and I took a course in college, rather fatefully now, that was called Music and Sound for Film. And I went in being interested in the music part, being like, ooh, film composition, that sounds like something I could do. But I never even thought about, like, sound effects in movies and TV. And was sort of like, oh, this is interesting. And, like, for my final project, because I didn't know any better at the time, like, now I just kind of wince thinking about it. But, like, I did sound effects for a little short film, and, like, because I didn't know better at the time, I just, like, for a kid falling on the floor, I just had this kind of, like, weird plastic tub and, like, had my microphone and was just slamming the plastic tub on my desk. Like, I'll make it sound like a kid! And then, like, EQing it to the lows, which is not how you do that. But I didn't know that at the time. And then, like, in the following kind of gap year, I started kind of dealing with my depression. Like, I started watching a lot of TV and cartoons for the first time since my childhood. And it was kind of like this escapist, like, getting back to my childhood kind of thing at first. But, like, Rick and Morty kind of opened that doorway for me.
Mm-hmm.
Of, like, and, like, back in season one, I was a fan since season one, guys. But, like, that kind of opened the door, and I, like, to, like, being like, oh, I really like animation still. And then the following year, I just watched a bunch of stuff. I watched Adventure Time. I watched BoJack when BoJack first came out, which I think is probably the greatest show about mental illness on TV, in my personal opinion.
BoJack?
BoJack Horseman, yeah.
Oh, yes, I've heard of this too. I need to get on the animation train. I haven't really pursued it.
I am now kind of an expert on that front. I'm actually, one of my day jobs is actually to write BuzzFeedy YouTube videos about animation, like cartoons and stuff. So that's one of my day jobs. And that's great, because that's a freelance gig, so I can just take it whenever.
Yeah.
And do it on my own time, which is the dream for any any working artist. But anyway, I think it was actually when I revisited Ren and Stimpy that I was just, like, really kind of, like, overtaken with how sound was used in that show. And I, like, remembered back to my class and was like, this is interesting. Like, this is this would be a cool thing to do. So I, like, ended up moving to LA with sort of the vague goal of, like, all right, I want to try to become a writer, or I want to try to become, like, a sound effects editor for animation. And I, Nickelodeon has this, like, writer's program, and you, like, submit a script and, you know, to try to get accepted. And I submitted a script 2 years in a row and did not even get a call back. Which is probably not the proper term for that, but, you know, I didn't get to the second round.
Right.
And it was, I was fortunate enough to, like, meet someone in LA who actually, like, worked at Nickelodeon, and he, like, took me into the office, and I got, actually on two separate occasions, I got to go into Nickelodeon and, like, talk to people, and it just became kind of clear to me of, like, oh, this is not something I've trained for adequately. Like, the right. people who are working here, like, have, like, hardcore, like, gone to school on, like, how to, like, write a good script arc, and just, like, have been thinking about these things, like, way longer than I have. I'm kind of like, yay, I'm writing a script.
Right.
And, like,
so it's hard to break into.
Right. And so it was kind of this thing of, like, maybe I have, like, overestimated how difficult this would be, because of course I did that. And around that same time that I was having that realization, it was becoming very clear that I actually did, because I'm a musician and I have ears, in the metaphorical sense, I was very good at sensing things for sound design and audio editing and stuff like that. Because basically, right after I got to L.A., I fell into this job, kind of the best job I might ever have, working for this sound effects editor and sound designer and composer named Jonathan Snipes. Actually, through an alumni of that class at U of M, I met this composer, and that job was awesome, and he taught me Pro Tools and, like, you know, like, Foster was, like, willing to, like, bring me from the ground up on, like, how to edit yeah. audio and, like,
that's awesome.
Sampler instruments and all this stuff. And I guess this is where I get to brag a little bit that Jonathan is actually, he's in this band called Clipping that's on Sub Pop. So a lot of my duties was actually to sell, like, merch at LA Clipping shows, which was great. Like, that was, it was just, like, the best, most ideal job. But the only problem was that, you know, LA is expensive, and I still needed to pay the bills, and I wasn't getting hyper-regular hours with him all the time.
Right.
So I just sort of needed to find other work, and there were periods where money was just looking kind of scary. So I, you know, I delved into other various jobs, and then I was hired for this, like, sweet job for 2 weeks, and then a grant fell through for them, and everyone got laid off.
Oh, no.
So I used my severance money to go to Japan, and then I came back and got this internship. It's this little boutique post-audio place. They do a lot of sound effects editing, sound design, and then, like, pre-dubbing and mixing. And they're amazing, and they're all about, like, creating a safe workspace, hiring women, hiring LGBT, like really just, like, focusing on, like, diversity. And the work they do is awesome, and I loved it there. And I interned, and I got the opportunity to do a couple episodes of The Lion Guard for them, to do sound effects editing. Sort of, like, that's, like, the work history that I had in LA, and it's sort of, like, when I run over it like that, it's very much like, well, why you leave? It sounds awesome.
But you gained a lot of new skills, which is great.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, kind of at the same time, I was, like, earlier, I think, like, really the getting everything for Persist was a big turning point for me, because it was kind of around that time where I was sort of like, man, I want to be playing more music than I am. Like, I want to be playing out more than I am. Or just, like, you know, like, hey, come over. Let's just play a little bit. But the way that LA is structured and with how crazy people's schedules are, mine included, like, it's sort of like, okay, well, it's April. I have, like, 3 hours to play in the first Tuesday in June. Which is, like, not that far from the truth. And so it was sort of like I was starting to feel very frustrated again, kind of missing the community of people that I had left. And also, like, as part of the geography question, you know, I was born and raised in Chicago, then was in Ann Arbor, and kind of got used, especially when I was in Ann Arbor, to sort of, like, when you're a musician, like, the East Coast and, like, kind of Great Lakes states are almost, it's like a circuit that people do, you know? Like, it's easy to tour. I mean, it's not always easy to find shows, but it's at least easy, in theory, to cobble together a tour. And I kind of, I really missed that interconnectedness. Like, with LA, you can go either up to San Francisco or down to San Diego, but it didn't really feel like the exchange was, like, quite as, like, intimate as this circuit. And maybe I'm wrong. I plenty of people who are in LA longer than I might disagree, and they're probably right.
But you liked this particular circuit.
Exactly.
In the Midwest.
And so it was kind of just getting to this point of, like, I was working, I had to work so hard just to make rent.
Oh, God. That, I know that feeling.
I'm sure living in New York.
Oh, my God.
Like, I just had to work so hard to make rent that I didn't, at the end of the day, like, I just didn't have the energy to do music. I just wanted to, like, lie on the couch and, like, watch something and go to bed. It was not, it just became, for that and, like, other reasons, like, I got kind of in the most serious rut of depression since probably, like, high school, high school, middle school, and it got bad. It got scary. Like, it was never, like, suicidal, but, like, it was scary, and I was, it just became clear, and, like, I had a there was a family tragedy in February, where a really close family member of mine passed away, and I hadn't seen her in, like, almost 3 years, and I was there when she passed, so I was able to see her, but I think, like, for me and for my parents who had moved to Idaho, it was kind of this, like, this realization of, like, we're too spread out, we haven't seen people, like, we need to consolidate.
Yeah.
So for all these kinds of reasons, by the time I got the opportunity, I was already kind of in this bad headspace, and realized that the healthy thing for me to do would be to, like, move out, start over.
Have a support,
which was a really
system.
Hard decision to make, because, like, being given an incredible opportunity, like, to work on a Disney show post place, like, not everyone does that, and, like not everyone gets that chance, and, like, I loved it there, you know, but it wasn't, it was still, like, at the end of the day, I was like, well, I love it here, but why do I still feel so horrible when I, like, get in my car?
Yeah.
I got very used to crying in my car in LA. it also got to the point where it was clear that if I took the gig, it would kind of mean throwing in the towel on my music career, at least for the moment.
Because it was such a big commitment.
Yeah. It would have been I think it would have ended up being a very big commitment. Like, the people who were there regularly were there, like, 10 hours a day, and then also often staying late or on weekends. It was just something I wasn't quite ready to do yet.
Yeah.
It was sort of like a couple years down the line, but like not right now. Yeah. Not right now.
How has it been since you came back to the Midwest, as far as like having friends around and support group and resources, and like what sort of artistic things have you found that are exciting you?
I mean, it's just great to like be like, hey man, you want to play tonight? Yeah. Those texts never happened in LA, but they happen here.
Yeah, community.
It's like I've been going to shows way more frequently, played with more people, and it's like that's exactly what I wanted. That's exactly the kind of environment that I wanted to return to, you know. And finding like a job that I feel comfortable with. You know, like I'm not gonna find anything like I found in LA, which is kind of this thing I'm like reluctantly coming to. It's like, man, if any of those things existed here, that would be perfect. Or like in Chicago, like I'm considering moving to Chicago in the spring, because I have a lot of friends there as well. And after living in LA, I really like the idea of trains.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was. I think it's been a healthy decision. Like I haven't really regretted moving. I've like lamented, you know, the loss of the various work opportunities that I had, of course, and really come to appreciate how special it was. But also like on the slightly more opposite or bright side of that coin, like, you know, like how much I was able to learn from those things.
Yeah. And you're still doing some editing and stuff and using that as part of your income?
Trying to.
Yeah.
Attempting to find the work. So, yeah, because like figuring out a freelance market is a lot of work. And it's sort of like, well, man, I'm already like spending a lot of energy, like, trying to find dates for my band and stuff. I have
right.
to also, like, work on my job.
Like, ugh. Network. I know, I feel the same way.
What kind of work do you do? Maybe you've mentioned this in podcast episodes I haven't listened to.
Yeah, I was doing more freelancy, flexible stuff, and then in May I got a more 9-to-5 office manager gig at an advertising agency to have
nice.
More stability. But it's definitely taken a toll on how much I can do with the podcast and with other acting things. Because the same as, like you said, I'm exhausted. I just want to shut off at the end of the day.
Right. Yeah.
So,
it's like,
it's hard.
It's a weird, you know, it's a hard thing to navigate, because I mean obviously you're by overexerting yourself all the time, that's unhealthy too, like
yeah.
Everyone deserves a break in their day.
But then of course the artistic stuff is what you really want to be doing, and it's what fuels you, so you have to.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally.
So yeah, it's been like coming back to Detroit, I think it's been like a, you know, like I've been picking up my instrument more, I've been writing more, and sort of like with the goal of like, okay, I'm here now, like I don't have to work as much to make rent, like basically I'm living at a friend's house for very cheap, like
nice.
Most of the things I'm doing is like, you know, going into savings, like I don't have to overexert myself at work, so I can, like, come home and, like, write. And I have, like, specific goals of, like, projects I want to try to get off the ground and collaborations and stuff like that. So that's been really good. And that was one reason why Detroit really appealed to me, was because, like, my boyfriend and my friend Molly are, like, living in this huge 4-bedroom house for a grand total of $700 a month.
Oh my God. Don't make me cry.
I know. they each get a bedroom and an office. I mean, like, and
that's,
you know,
crazy.
You might feel slightly less envious when they receive their energy bill for the winter
because I haven't gotten to spend much time in Detroit. My family has all moved away in the last 5 years. But, like, what are some of the artistic venues or places where exciting things are happening right now? All my Michigan friends are going to love this episode.
Well, I'm still trying to figure it out. It's like, you know, it's changing so rapidly.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, it's like, and, you know, this is my first time, like, living in Detroit. But, like, right off the top of my head, Trixie's comes to mind, which is this fantastic little dive bar in Hamtramck. And Trixie's is great because they'll kind of just, like, they seem, like, very open to, like, booking creative music. My friend Dave Hurley started a bi-weekly series there every other Monday called Fire Music Mondays. That's just, like, a free jazz series.
Nice.
Last night, it was, like, the last one for the year, and, like, this, like, huge group of people came in who, like, not for the music, I don't think. I think they were just there to grab a drink, and one of the bands played. It was, like, an improvised trio, and they finished the piece, and the entire bar was dead silent for, like, 60 seconds. Just, like, listen, like, and it was just, like, this very respectful, like, powerful silence until, like, finally they kind of, like, moved in a, like, okay, we're done kind of way, and then everyone applauded.
That's awesome.
Like, man, like, these people didn't even come here for the music, and yeah, they, like, you know, they were listening. It was great. It was crazy. So Trixie's is great. I would say the UFO Factory, there was a crazy thing that happened. So, like, the UFO Factory is this really, I've actually never been, but a lot of my friends have played there a lot, and it's a venue that's very, very important to a lot of friends of mine. And it's this, like, great little venue, and there's eye-rolling, catered to the wealthy development going around literally all sides of it. Like, the entire block other than the UFO Factory is
gentrifying
and, like, getting this new development under this, like, specific company. A couple months ago, one of the wrecking balls, quote unquote, accidentally hit the UFO Factory and jeopardized part of the foundation,
oh,
and they had
no.
to shut down.
Oh, no. So,
yeah, and it was the kind of thing where, like, the owner rushed out and, like, asked them to stop working, and they didn't stop working, and then the police came and asked them to stop working, and they didn't stop working.
That has to be illegal.
Yeah, it was awful, like, listening, hearing about it. I mean, I think the good news is that I think they won the lawsuit, which is great, because, like, I guess this company also, like, you know, like, 10 years ago or something had a similar situation with one of their other developments where there was, like, one piece of land that they wanted, but there was something there, so they kind of, like,
messed it up.
Did something a little shady to
Interesting.
Get it out of the way. But I think the UFO Factory won the lawsuit and is reopening. So that's great, because that is something very needed. Trina Sofs is another really good place. That's on Gratiot. They have a lot of, like, again, kind of like creative jazz sorts of creative music there.
So if you are having a day where you're feeling really down and uninspired, are there any, like, concrete things that you reach for again and again, like a particular album you listen to or a book or something like that?
If I'm having a really bad day, honestly, I'll just kind of, like, now, like, for me right now, I'll, like, pause for a second, be like, I just gotta play Zelda for an hour.
And then I'll, zone, like, out.
Fight all the imaginary monsters, come back and be like, all right, I feel neutralized now. I mean, my ultimate, like, centering and kind of raison d'etre album is Demon Days by Gorillaz. Like, that was kind of the album that got me into music. And, like, when I'm feeling really upset, like, I'll still always come back to that album. And I listened to the final track on loop during my work commute the day after Trump got elected.
Oh, God. I have to go listen to it
it's
now.
It's like this, you know, demon days, it's so cold inside, it's so hard for a good soul to survive. You can't even trust the air you breathe, because Mother Earth wants us all to leave. Like, listening to that song and just, like, crying in my car as I'm driving to work.
Yeah, that day.
Yeah. That was... So, you know, it's like using that album to get through it.
Yeah.
And then I was actually thinking the other day, I'm due for a reading. I feel like every couple of years I have to read Franny and Zooey by J.D. Salinger.
Franny and Zooey, yeah.
Have you read it?
Yeah. Yeah, but not in a long time. I should look at it again.
Yeah. Just like, I mean, no spoilers. You can't really spoiler that book, but, I mean, you know, it's basically... For anyone that hasn't read it, it's basically just like 100 or so pages of talking about why people do art and how to be an artist and not be sad and how to deal with, like, you know, shows where you come in and people are, no one's there, and like, what do you do in that situation? Which is probably a familiar situation to almost any artist.
Well, that's a good one.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess that's my
trifecta.
Zelda, Gorillaz, and Salinger.
Perfect. And then the last question is, have you seen or heard anything lately that you want to recommend of any art form?
Recommend.
It could be a friend's album. It could be something you saw recently.
This is so lame. I can't even say this as a recommendation because it's that lame. But I'm, like, way behind the game with Lemonade, and I just got it.
Oh, my God.
And, like, it has just been on loop.
I mean, you're right. That is lame, but I'm glad you've come around to it, because it's the best.
I was just, like, I was so, like, I guess I was just so far down my own rabbit hole when it first came out.
But I'm so happy, like, for you that you're experiencing it now, because I was so obsessed with it when it came out.
I know! And, like, a lot, I'm discovering, like, I mean, my boyfriend hadn't really listened to it. Like, I'm discovering a couple other of my friends, like, haven't listened to it. I'm just like, here, I'll give you my album.
Have you seen the visual album?
I got the DVD. I've been, like, saving it for a special occasion. And now it's just getting to the point where I'm, like, saving it a little too much. I just need to watch it.
You gotta watch it. Because I saw the visual album first. That was the first time I heard the music.
Oh, man.
And I can't, I can't disassociate the images from the songs when I hear them. It's really cool.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I'm so excited to watch that. But things that I've been watching or reading or listening to that, like, maybe everyone else hasn't already done so. this is a friend plug. My friend Tanner Porter, who's on her song is the final song on Persist. I guess it's been out for like a year now, but she has this album called The Summer Sinks that is just almost mad at how brilliant it is. It's kind of like that like artist jealousy of like, oh,
my friends are so talented.
You're so good.
Okay, great.
Her album, and other Persist people with albums, I'll just run them down real quick. Okay. Molly Jones, who did Let Go, she has an album called Microliths that just came out a couple months ago. That's fantastic. Betsy Soukup is gonna release one in 2018. Any others? Britt Manor, that song is on her album, which you should get because it's awesome. Soch Talk's album is from their debut EP, which is also just insane because they're all insane and crazy, crazy talented people. oh God, I'm sure I'm leaving out people. I think Polar Tropica just released an EP. Yeah. I would encourage you to get Persist, and then if you like what you heard on Persist, you should just Google that person. I've actually included links to all their websites and their music on the page of Persist, so if you hear something you like, go and support that person and buy one of their other albums.
Yeah, that's a perfect place to leave it. Yay! Everybody go get Persist.
Yay!
Well, Kristen, thank you so much for doing this. It was really lovely to get to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you for asking me.
Thank you for listening to the Compass Podcast. If you find these conversations valuable to your life as an artist and would like to support the ongoing production of The Compass, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/thecompasspodcast. Pledges start at as little as $1 a month. You'll get access to bonus content, and anything you can give would be greatly appreciated. Also, if you have a moment, please rate or review in iTunes. Every little bit helps other listeners to find the podcast. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brandon Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.